So, Paul, I mean, I'm interested in this. You're in college still at this point?
Yes.
And then, so in the 72-ish, you started going to the...
Yeah, I graduated in 71.
Okay.
And then, 72 was at Oak Hill by that time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're a college student, and then shortly after that you graduate. How was this seen then among college students? Was there a kind of a buzz at Calvin about this new church?
Well, yeah, it was called the Underground Church. I mean, that was sort of the Underground Church movement, and Fellowship of Acts was part of that. And there was lots of rumors going around, and most of them untrue, of course. And I think it was said that we had beer and pretzels for communion.
And that wasn't untrue.
That was not true.
Anna Mae, what is your first memory?
Of sitting at a worship service and having this woman behind me start a song by singing the last line a cappella and everybody joining in, and I thought, oh my goodness, I can't believe it. I could never do that. And 2 months later, I was doing it.
Ah.
2 months or less. It was Connie or me leading the singing. And, sometimes we didn't quite get off on the same pitch, and it was a little hard to sing harmony, but we used no piano, no organ. It was always a cappella, or then we got into guitar. But for a long time, that was it. It was either guitar or nothing at all.
Yeah, and the creativity of it was astonishing, coming out of the Christian Reformed Church, where, the Psalter hymnal was, the first and last word in music. And the minister, the preacher, was the only liturgist. To suddenly have a place where, new music was being written, and liturgy was happening, almost spontaneously out of household groups. And you had to be on your toes all the time, and it was wonderful. I mean, we had a place, we had a role, and it wasn't just a receiving liturgy or worship, it was participating.
So a very lot of what still happens at the COS goes back to those days. What Paul was hinting at, instead of every the ministers running the church, from the very beginning we tried to have participation. I mean, that was one of the buzzwords of participation, and that took the form of we ourselves composing the liturgy in the worship committee and putting it out in the congregation and for a couple of weeks and asking for a response from it and so forth. And from the very beginning, having lay people read scripture and offer prayers and so forth. And these are features that have endured. And one other thing is also goes back to the roots. The insistence, maybe naive or arrogant, I don't know, the insistence on thinking it through. So we all knew how collections were always taken in the churches that we were familiar with. There were deacons who went up and down the aisles, right? So we asked, given the character of the collection, the offering, what's the best way to do this? What expresses what's going on? Well, it seemed to us that the worst thing to do is for everybody to sit passively in their seats. For an offering, why not go forward? Now, in fact, we know that that was also the practice of the Church of Rome about 150. So we could argue both it seems like the right thing to do, and it's historical. Now, this still goes on, this thinking it through. Here's, for me, the most recent example. I'd agreed to, last summer, help with the landscaping. So I arrive at the first meeting, and lo and behold, I discover it's not called the Landscape Committee, it's called the Stewardship Committee. And the first thing that council wants us to do is formulate some principles for stewardship. So we can't just plant shrubs and so forth, but we need principles for this. I thought, wonderful, this is absolutely wonderful. Nothing has changed.
Now, it seems to me that would be, there's a wonderful side of it, but is there a somewhat fatiguing side? I mean, if you're...
Yes. Oh, sure.
I mean, did the bushes ever get planted?
Well, eventually, but I mean, yeah, we needed principles for planting these bushes first.
So, in the early church then, you're thinking
true.
Through...
This happened last summer.
You're thinking through every part of the service. I mean, so in a sense, you're making it up as you go, but in a sense, you're going back to historical forms.
Yeah.
How much time are we talking? How much? You know, what was the kind of creativity cycle like at that point?
Every week.
Every week was different, or
well.
No. But you've got to animate. We all were there that first year. So you visualize this first year. We had no liturgies. We decided that we were going to compose liturgies. We're not just going to do it the way it's always been done. So, and why we settled on church here, I have no memory of that. But anyway, we did from the very beginning. So now you've got to visualize.
We added a few too along the way.
Yeah, right. Now you've got to visualize Advent is coming up, and we have zero liturgy for Advent, just nothing. So, yeah, meetings galore, volunteerism was, I mean, it was all volunteerism. Lord's Supper, here I do have to confess, I haven't said this to so many people, I just used clout. I had been on the denominational liturgy committee, discovered that John Calvin thought that a Sunday morning service should be word and sacrament. It's also what the committee recommended. Now, I knew that if we had a discussion about this, I could compose everybody's speech on both sides. It would go on endlessly. Some people would say, well, it becomes meaningless if it's so frequent. So I just used clout. I didn't tell anybody I was using clout, but I did. I said, let's try it for 6 months, every Sunday, Lord's Supper, and then let's have a vote at the end of the 6 months. We had a vote at the end of the 6 months, and the vote was unanimous to continue it. That's why we have the liturgy we do.
At what point did you start doing the communion in circles, which is fairly unusual?
Right away.
And how did that?
We asked, what's the right way to do this?
Do we want squares? Do we want triangles?
Circles. Oh, triangles.
So, all right. So that came out very. Very early on, is that circular communion. Very interesting.
Well, the very first Sunday, I remember vividly that first Sunday, we did not have any music during the communion. And it was lugubrious. It was really mournful. Back to the old, most of you are too young to remember the old Christian Reform sort of doctrine. So then the second Sunday, we said we'd have the music during communion, and that's how that happened, and it's continued ever since. But from the very first, it was a circle, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm talking about music. You know, the bigger the church got and the longer it took to do communion, the more songs we needed. And I can remember when Connie first composed that communion song, we used that quite a bit and we changed keys, and that one song could get us through the entire communion. Not so today. And if you look in Joyful Noises and you look at the number of songs that are in there, you'll find two things if you look at the dates. The very first songs composed at Church of the Servant were in 1974. With the installation of our first pastor when we took on the name Church of the Servant. And Nick came to me and Connie and said, would you please write some new music for this special service on the theme of servanthood? Wow. I went home and I got out my concordance and I wrote down all the passages, all the references to servanthood. And I looked at which ones I thought would make for some song text. And between the two of us, I think we wrote five songs for that service. Then if you look, you'll see there's a lot of them in the section under communion, and you'll find several under baptism, and that's because this church was prolific. It's baby after, and it's still that same way, baby after baby after baby, you have all these baptisms, so we wanted new music for baptism. So there's quite a few songs for baptism and for communion, and it grew out of our church life, because that's where we felt there was this gap of the kind of music that we wanted to celebrate communion and celebrate baptism with, so.
Now, You've talked about the way there was this constant creativity around the music, around the liturgy. What I want to know the dirt now. Okay, so was there some wrangling going on? I mean, were there issues that that you can think of where there is disagreement? Like you talked about the communion, that there would have been disagreement had it not been just done for the 6 months. Were there things as you went that there was this kind of tension about as you did?
I don't think so.
I don't think it was
there was genuine and sincere love.
From the heart.
Greg,
yeah.
The one controversy was that George Marsden desperately wanted to have an organ.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. All right.
We were actually, there was actually an organ donated to us at one point, but we didn't take it. There was actually an organ donated to us by someone once.
So let's, okay, George.
But
I think I know, but let's have Anna May. Why no organ?
Because people came from churches where the organ drowned out the voice, and yep. The principle was going to be that the most wonderful instrument of all is the human voice, and why drown the human voice out?
And so we didn't want one person, here it goes again, one person in charge of all the music, doing all the music.
The one thing I remember, though, when it comes to what we enjoy today, is that there was less art, I believe. And I mean, maybe you can speak to this, Paul. I remember a series of hoops with fiber art, the 7 days of creation. That is the only art, really, that I remember from the early years, because we were in the Presbyterian building, and the big cry was, the Presbyterians are coming, we have to get out. And so anything that you wanted to do, it had to be approved by this other church, and they had to want it there too. And that is one thing about this being in our own building. There's been a proliferation of wonderful artwork, and it's the building, I think, even the addition has given us so much more opportunity to be creative with art. So that's one wonderful thing that's happened.
In the early years, a couple questions, and just feel free to jump in. One, I'm interested to know if there was quite a bit of spontaneous stuff happening in services. Another thing I'm interested in, see, I don't want to be negative, but I'm always looking at, a church is still a church, right? There's got to be some growing edges there. And so I'm interested, was this just this almost heavenly time, or was there some things going on? And so one of the things that, I wonder about, when you open up a church to, you become known for kind of creativity, people that go a little bit beyond creative are attracted. So I've been in services where it's kind of a free-flowing thing, and there'll be clearly like one person who's kind of way out there. And so are there times like when there's a sense of spontaneity and someone kind of stands up and does something and you say like, ooh, that was off. That was was there a sense of things getting out of range sometimes?
That was true of Fellowship of the Acts sometimes, fairly often, I suppose.
What kinds of things? I mean, I'm just so what was it spontaneous things that were happening or?
And it was just, Fellowship of the Acts could be chaotic. Not much of a script or to follow. And the assignment, there were households connected to Fellowship of the Acts, and a household was responsible for the Sunday afternoon service on a given Sunday. And what happened would vary enormously depending on who happened to be in that household and what their sensibilities were or lack of sensibility. So why didn't that carry over into Church of the Servant? Because from the very beginning, we had committees that were open to people just showing up and saying, I'd like to be a member of this committee. Once again, it was not the council who appointed people to committees, but if you wanted to be on the worship committee, you showed up. And that holds potential danger, but
so at this point, then it wasn't happening in the creativity wasn't happening in the service itself.
Not
it was
really.
Happening beforehand. So there was a kind of a protocol.
Am I misremembering?
Well, I remember a lot more prayer participation.
Yep, it was much smaller. You got to realize.
Right. So
it was small.
So people praying in the congregational prayer could be easily heard by the whole group,
yeah.
You know, wherever they happen to be sitting. And so that was part of the vitality of the worship, was individual participation, spontaneous participation.
Now, at what point did you go from these early years of everything is new to something that we would recognize today as COS services? You know, so for instance, I know that the cardstock services, for instance, you know, how early was that? You know, how early was it where you said, this is the Advent liturgy, or this is how we do a service? You know, you forgot to put that in the service, you know, when it kind of started to really form.
Boy, my memory is that we got more serious when we hired a pastor, and that's when things became a little bit more regular.
But that was just 2 years into Church of the Servant.
Right, 1974, I believe.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So you've got to visualize. I'll answer your question. You've got to visualize once again the beginnings as involving enormous amounts of volunteerism. So yeah, so we said let's do without a pastor. But we wanted good sermons. We didn't just want me to pop up or Paul and give some random thoughts. So we wanted really good sermons. Now it happens that in Grand Rapids there are a lot of good preachers around, but somebody's got to call them, and it turns out call them well in advance. And so if you're in charge of that, as I was for a year, by the end of the year, you're exhausted with this volunteerism. It's just exhausting. So after 2 years of that, you say, let's have a regular pastor. How about it? And the liturgies, I think Anna May, once we got through the first year, we had a liturgy for each season. And they were still pretty rough, but they got revised over the years. Some of them pretty much got scrapped and replaced with something else. But after the first year, if we could go, if you know it now, you could go back to the second year, you'd pretty much recognize.
Okay, it would be something we'd recognize.
Although the long season in the regular church year, Pentecost goes from Pentecost Day to when Advent starts. And we divided that up into a Pentecost season and a Trinity season. And then because they were so long and we wanted the opportunity to make new liturgies, we decided to have two that stretched from Pentecost Day to when school started in September. And then we had two more that went from September to Advent. So we really have more liturgies in our church year than the other mainline churches.
Now, you...